What up, everybody? Jay Hicks with the Hip Hop Sports Report Podcast. Today is Tuesday evening, September the 30th. So we stare in October in the face, y'all. In 2014, we only got 3 more months left in the year, man. It's the last quarter of the year. How y'all doing this evening? I'm going to touch on a few different things tonight on the podcast. I got to say, man, I'm kind of podcasting with a heavy heart today. Despite the fact that today is National Podcasting Day. So I wanted to make sure I got at y'all on National Podcasting Day because that's, you know, that's something, I guess, right? But yeah, man, I'm kind of podcasting with a heavy heart as a sports fan because anybody that watches football probably saw what happened last night in Kansas City. And if you follow me, Jay Hicks here, and the HHSR podcast, you probably know about my feelings for one of the particular combatants in last night's game. And they really throwing dirt on my boy right now, man. Y'all really throwing dirt on my boy. We're going to get into all of that, man. We're going to leave the show with that momentarily, but I wanted to remind everybody to check out our website, hiphopsportsupport.com. And then also the podcast here can be found on iTunes as well. So we're still doing the iTunes thing, obviously. So subscribe to the podcast, please, on iTunes. And make sure you rate the podcast as well and leave any feedback that you might have. And Twitter.com/HHS Report, as well as Facebook.com/HHS Report. You can find us there as well. So yell at us, let us know what you like, what you don't like, what you want to hear more of. Any topic or segment ideas, any of that kind of stuff, man. We're very open here. So, yeah. National Football League, man. 4 weeks are in the book. So, not every team has played 4 games. I think there's maybe 6 teams on bye this past Sunday. But we do have a pretty good feel, or so we think, of some of the team's performance this year. And we're going to talk a little bit about Week 4 in more detail. But first things first, let's get down to business, y'all. Let's get down to business. The Patriots got destroyed last night by the Kansas City Chiefs in Kansas City. I don't even remember the final score. I think it was 42-14 or 41-14, something like that. The Patriots looked absolutely atrocious from start to finish. Kansas City just torched them. Just torched them. They just cooked those boys, and it was disgusting to watch. If you have any type of affinity towards the Patriots or any of their players in particular. Now, I, for those of you who follow the podcast, you all know that I am a hardcore Tom Brady supporter, and I have been for many years now. I was not always this way. I'm from Ohio. Tom Brady's from California. He went to school at Michigan. I grew up not really caring for Michigan too much, as you might guess. He went to Michigan. And he came into the league and, you know, was a 6th round pick. Nobody really thought much about him, but he kind of turned me into a fan with his play and the way he carries himself and the way he runs that team and all of that stuff. And so now I look at him as one of the, easily one of the 3 best quarterbacks of all time. It's hard to compare QBs from different eras, and I get that, but I don't see how anybody could rank anyone ahead of Brady in this era, at least. And if we're going to be, I mean, we have to go back to, I think, Joe Montana before we talk about anybody that's in the discussion with him, in my personal opinion. Brady was horrendous last night. I think he completed maybe less than 50% of his passes. I don't even have the stats pulled up in front of me. Y'all saw it. Y'all, if y'all follow football, y'all saw it. Y'all heard about it. He was garbage last night. Brady was garbage, and the Patriots were worse last night. And nobody looked good on that team. Nobody. But Tom's been on top for a while, and so have the Patriots. And so now, what you're seeing is everybody trying to get their shots in while they're down. And if, you know, T.I. said a long time ago, man, if they ain't hating, start worrying then. Brady and the Patriots have a lot of haters because they've been on top for a long, long time. And so now that they're faced with a little bit of adversity, everybody wants to throw dirt on them and say, this is it. Oh, they're done. They are done. We're through. The Patriots, this era, whatever you want to call it, they haven't won a Super Bowl in 10 years, and their era of domination in the National Football League is over. The fact that people are actually throwing dirt on Tom Brady, and they mean it, I think is laughable. And when I was on Twitter last night, just listening to the hatred spew from every angle, from every direction, from every person with a Twitter account and 140 characters to burn, I was seething, y'all. I was seething with anger and frustration. I could not believe that. You know what? It wasn't even so much that they were throwing dirt on Brady per se. It was more so the fact that so many people were blinded to what was really going on with this football team. I mean, yeah, the fact that Brady had, you know, Brady was the subject of the thing, you know, that played a role in it for me personally. But really, it's like, how could this many people be this dumb when it comes to football? I just didn't understand it. I mean, it's laughable to think that Brady is done. You might even say he's declining. And you know what? I'm not even going to totally fight y'all on that. If you think he's in decline, or if you think he's maybe not as good as he was a few years ago, I'm not going to totally go to war with you on that topic, because he's 37 years old. He's 37 years old. He's supposed to be in decline right now. That's not a knock. Like, that's not really a slight. Like, Kobe fans are like the most stubborn people that you'll ever come across. The Kobe Bryant stans that are out there. And when you would mention to them that Kobe's in decline, they'll flip the coffee table over in front of you and throw a hissy fit. And it's like, dog, he's supposed to be in decline, though, because he's played a jillion minutes and he's been in the league for 20 years. This is what happens to guys that have been around that long. Same thing with Brady. He's in his 15th season, I think. Yeah, he's going to be in decline a little bit at age 37. That's fine. That's completely fine. But when you look at the team around him, and I know some of you guys may be looking at me and saying, well, he's just a Tom Brady apologist. He's just making excuses. I'm asking y'all with a rational lens to look at this football team in New England. I think Tom Brady has spoiled everybody with his play over the years, myself included. Why? Because right here on this podcast, not, what was it, 3 or 4 weeks ago, I picked the New England Patriots to win the Super Bowl this year. And it's not because I felt that they had the best team. I said Seattle had the best team. But I didn't think Seattle was going to make it back to the dance. I didn't think Denver was going to make it back to the dance either. Mainly because it's really difficult for teams to get back that far. And it just doesn't happen that often anymore. And so chances are we're going to see two new teams in there. Just by the numbers, you know what I'm saying? It's not impossible for a repeat to happen. But chances are we're going to see two new teams. And I thought Seattle wasn't going to make it. But I thought there's not that many contenders in the AFC that I really trusted. And so, you know, of course I trust Brady and the Pats. So, yeah, I threw them in the big dance, and I just happened to have them winning that game. It's not that I thought they were such a great team, but when you look at this team last night that they put on the field, Bill Belichick is shuffling around the offensive line like a deck of cards. He's got rookies in the lineup now. He's moving guys around. He's benching this guy. He's starting this guy. It's chaotic. The offensive line is completely chaotic. And it showed last night, because in the first half, Brady was, you know, he didn't take a whole bunch of hits. He didn't get sacked a lot, but he was getting pressured quite a bit. And he was forced to make decisions very, very quickly. And he was forced to get rid of the ball extremely quick for fear of getting sacked and potentially getting strip sacked and losing the football and turning it over or forcing, you know, bad throws and things of that nature. So he's getting rid of the ball as soon as he can. And that's typically not the worst strategy in the world. Peyton Manning's made a whole career out of it. Here's the problem. The problem is, the Patriot receivers are not nearly athletic enough to create the necessary separation in that short amount of time to get open. And that's just the long and short of it. The Patriots' best receiver is Julian Edelman. He's their best receiver. He's the receiver that Tom Brady has the most faith in by far right now. Julian Edelman, I think he's a fine football player. I actually like Julian Edelman. I think he's a fine football player. He's not a tremendous athlete. He's, you know, as far as, he's a little shifty, but he's not the quickest dude out there. He's not especially fast. He doesn't have especially great hands. You know, they're nothing to write home about. And he's not particularly fast. He's not going to run the deep ball. And he's not big. And he's not strong. So just listen to me describe him out loud. It sounds like he's lacking quite a bit of characteristics that would make up a quality wide receiver in this league, right? Well, that's what it is. He's the best they have to offer. That's why Brady's looking at Edelman on every throw. Julian Edelman is listed at 5'10". And I don't even think he's that tall. I mean, you know how they are in these, you know, anytime going back to when you were in middle school, they would exaggerate about your height in the little program that they give out to mom and dad in the bleachers, right? They say Julian Edelman's 5'10". He might not be that tall. He might be 5'9", 5'8". And he's the primary target. They said it on the show last night on Monday Night Football. Kansas City's corners were 6'2 and 6'3". Julian Edelman can't compete with those guys. Brady drops back and throws it deep down the right sideline at the beginning of the game. Edelman creates zero separation from the corner, who just eclipses Edelman on the play. And he had no shot at the ball. And it'd be different if Julian Edelman had like 4.3 speed, then maybe you could kind of, you know, justify it. But this dude was a college quarterback. He was a late round pick. I think he was drafted. He might have been undrafted, but I think he was a late round pick out of a MAC school. He played quarterback in college, and they've converted him into the best receiver on the team. That tells you everything you need to know about this offense. Bill Belichick is drafting bums, and he's been getting away with it for years. Bill Belichick's doing two things in April and May. He's either trading back and drafting bums, or he's just drafting bums. And that's basically it. I mean, he's gotten a few decent ball players here and there, but specifically on offense and specifically at the wide receiver position, it's been bust after bust after bust. It's just been a nightmare. And receiver is one of those positions where you can kind of like easily tell in college like who's going to be decent more often than not. I mean, you're not going to get them all right, but you can look at receiver in college and be like, okay, AJ Green, yeah, that dude's going to be nasty in the league. Okay, Julio Jones, yeah, he's going to be really good in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Now, granted, they didn't have any picks high enough to get guys like that, but the point is that there's been players out there. In fact, this year, this is one of the deepest receiver drafts we've seen in years. And did New England spend a high pick on one? No. What did they do? They drafted a defensive line player from Florida who had two knee operations in the first round. And how did that help them last night? The Chiefs ran all up and down the field last night. As a matter of fact, Kansas City's offense ran up 300 yards of total offense in the first half. To put that in perspective, that would be obviously on pace to surpass 600 yards of offense for the game. The tops in the league right now through 4 weeks, I believe, is Atlanta and Indianapolis are tied at 444 yards per game offensively. The Chiefs were on pace to eclipse 600. And this is Bill Belichick. He's supposed to be the defensive guru. Tom Brady doesn't play defense. Tom Brady doesn't play defensive line or linebacker. This is supposed to be on Belichick. He's supposed to be the defensive guru. Somewhere along the lines, when Brady came in, all of a sudden, Belichick became a quote-unquote offensive genius. And now, he gets half of the credit for all the success that Brady's had throughout his career. I never understood that. And we'll get to that. We'll elaborate more on that in a minute. But getting back to the receiving core, there is none. There's nothing to get back to. It's Edelman, and then after that, it's Danny Amendola. He's a bum. He never stayed healthy even when he was in St. Louis. He comes into New England. Tom Brady can't even throw him the ball. You have Brandon LaFell, who is an okay player at best, but he was a cast-off from a Carolina team that had a horrific receiving core on the whole, right? And they didn't even keep him. And so they let him go. He comes to New England. He scored a touchdown last night. He looked halfway decent. But, I mean, come on. But he's the best athlete they have at receiver. But when you have Amendola, and when you have Edelman, and when you have the other two young kids that they drafted a couple years ago, Kembrell Tompkins and Aaron Dobson, those two guys are supposed to be the guys that were going to develop in this offense. They didn't even play last night. They didn't even play. They didn't even suit up. So what is it that, you know, what is it that this team is doing with these quote-unquote weapons that their Hall of Fame, future Hall of Fame quarterback can't seem to take advantage of? It blows my mind that they've done nothing with the receiving core that Brady has there. Tompkins and Dobson can't even get on the field. Edelman can't stay, or Amendola can't stay healthy. And then you have Gronkowski, who can't run anymore, y'all. And I love Gronk as a player. I think when he's 100%, he's the best football player in the league. Or, excuse me, the best tight end in the league. But the problem is that he's never been 100%. He even came into the league with back problems. Had surgery on his back in college and stuff like that. And he busted up his arm and stuff. He blew out his knee last year. You remember the Super Bowl that the Patriots lost in 2011? And everybody's always getting on Brady for, you know, Eli Manning owns him and all this other stuff. Tom Brady went into that game. His best weapon was Gronkowski. Gronkowski wasn't even healthy in that game. He was hobbling around on one leg. So Brady's forced to try to win this the Super Bowl with a dude on one leg that's his best weapon. You know what I'm saying? And let's not forget Aaron Hernandez. They had a little something with the two tight end thing. Well, Gronkowski's all busted up. And he's been under the knife more times than a Christmas ham. And then you have Aaron Hernandez getting locked up for murder. That's a lot for a team to recover from. And then, oh, by the way, Wes Welker was actually the dude that Brady targeted the most, and then he left. Belichick let him go, didn't pay him the money that he had coming to him. So now that's Brady's three best receivers. Gone. And they did nothing to replace them. The reason why I said a few minutes ago that even I take Tom Brady for granted is because I picked the Patriots to win the Super Bowl this year with this same cast of characters around Brady because they went to the AFC Championship game last year. And that should tell you everything that you need to know about the greatness of Tom Brady because he's the one constant. He and Belichick are the only constants there. But when Belichick is playing the role of both head coach and general manager, something's wrong, y'all. Remember when Bill Parcells said back in the day, well, if I'm going to be the chef, I should get to at least shop for the groceries, right? And now we have Belichick as the Parcells disciple, and he's got total autonomy over the Patriots organization. Well, I think Belichick need to get the hell up out the kitchen, y'all, for real, because he has been horrific with these roster moves, and he always sends these guys packing a few years before, you know, they hit the down part of their career because he doesn't want to pay them. And so they had a contract dispute looming with Logan Mankins. And so Belichick sends him to Tampa Bay at the start of the year. And they get a pick, a late pick, and a tight end back who doesn't even play. They don't even put Tim Wright on the field. So don't you think they could have used Logan Mankins last night? I mean, and again, Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. Brady gets strip sacked from behind. Tom Bahali is on Brady's back in less than 2 seconds. he blows by the left tackle Nate Solder, strips Tom Brady of the football, and it's recovered by Kansas City. And then Florio wants to get on Twitter talking about, well, Tom Brady said he was going to retire as soon as he sucked, so is he going to retire after this game? As if somehow it's Tom Brady's fault that he got blindsided by one of the best pass rushers in the league because his left tackle couldn't even get a hand on the guy. Now, I'm not going to say Brady is not without his mistakes, because that second interception to Amendola was all on Brady. That was just, he just forced a bad pass there. So be it. The one to Edelman, when Edelman broke off the route, the first INT, I don't know who that one was on. There was a miscommunication. They both probably share some responsibility there. But what we know is that Tom Brady made that mistake, and I think he also made a crucial mistake. There was a first down, I think, in the first half that he could have scrambled for, and he ended up throwing it, and Edelman dropped the pass, and he should have ran for that first down, and he would have had it. Those are, like, the only two real mistakes, like, real mistakes that I saw Brady make last night. I'm not saying that every throw was perfect on the money, but most of his throws were decent, considering the coverage. But when you have a slew of receivers that can't create separation at all, what is he supposed to do? I would love to hear these critics of Tom Brady respond and answer the question, what is he supposed to do? Because if he's throwing to Julian Edelman and Edelman's got larger players covering him, they can easily reach around him. They can easily, you know, bump him off the spot when they both go for the football. Brady threw one pass kind of high in the second half, and Edelman would have jumped to catch it, but he's not but 5 foot nothing, so he couldn't catch it. It's just like, what do you anticipate him to do if he's throwing to a bunch of receivers that either can't catch, he doesn't trust, they always get hurt, they can't stay on the field, or they don't know their routes, you know what I'm saying? What would you prefer him to do? Because I'll tell you this much, if you put any other quarterback in the NFL in the same situation, they're not going to have a lot more success than what Brady's having right now. But when you look at the other elite quarterbacks in the NFL, they got Jimmy Graham. They got, you know, Julius Thomas. They got Demaryius Thomas. They got Dez Bryant. They got Brandon Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey and AJ Green. You know what I'm saying? Not to say that all of those quarterbacks that throw to those guys are elite, but a few of them are. And I mean, those receivers are pretty good, y'all. You know? I mean, look at Aaron Rodgers. He's got Jordy Nelson to throw to. Jordy Nelson's like 6'3", and he can run. Randall Cobb can run. Edelman can't run. He can't outrun anybody. We saw that last night. I was actually texting with my cousin last night, and I told him, like, where is Tom Brady's Jimmy Graham? Where is Tom Brady's Demaryius Thomas? How come he never had, since Randy Moss left, he hasn't had a freakish athlete of a receiver to throw to, aside from Gronkowski, and he's always hurt. Where is his top flight target that he can pass the ball to? And he said, if you take the, and I think I named Jimmy Graham, Dez Bryant, Demaryius Thomas, and maybe somebody else. And he's like, if you take the second option on all those teams, they're still better than everything the Patriots have to offer. And it's true. If you take Terrence Williams off the Cowboys, if you take Marcus Colston off the Saints, or Brandon Cooks, however you feel about it, if you take, you know, Alshon Jeffrey off the Bears, if you take Julius Thomas off the Broncos, all of these dudes are way better than anybody that Brady has to throw to right now. And so I cannot sit here and knowing the offensive line struggles that they have and seeing that Belichick has done nothing to replenish the receiving core, even though he's had opportunities, you know, DeSean Jackson was a free agent, Steve Smith was a free agent, Eric Decker was a free agent, just guys that they could have traded for, they could have gotten somebody that can stretch the field. DeSean Jackson's not a perfect receiver, but you know what, he can still take it 80 yards to the crib. So you gotta respect that. That'll open up the middle of the field for Gronkowski and Julian Edelman. But they don't have anybody to go over the top because they're spending draft picks on Josh Boyce and Aaron Dobson. These guys are scrubs, y'all. So even though Belichick never did anything to fix the receiving core, the only thing that they ever did to fix, they fixed Wes Welker. When Welker left, they went in and brought in Amendola, even though they already had a Welker clone on the team. But when Randy Moss left, they never brought anybody in to replace Randy Moss. Now, what kind of sense does that make? They could have even gambled on Josh Gordon last year. He was available. They could have thrown a pick to Cleveland. I'm not saying it would have worked out because Gordon's a knucklehead, but it's still, they could have done that. Put Josh Gordon on the Patriots right now, assuming he's not suspended. That's a totally different team. And even now, I was with Anthony Houston, a friend of the podcast, and we'll talk about my weekend with him a little bit later on, but I was with him this weekend. I said, they need to be trading for Larry Fitzgerald right now because it appears like Arizona is content with letting him go at the end of the year so they don't have to pay him. Trade for him right now, please. They have nobody else to throw to. Andre Johnson was disgruntled in the preseason. Did Belichick go out and get Andre Johnson? No. I'm so sick of Bill Belichick doing Tom Brady dirty after all these years. And he's spoiled by Brady's performance because Brady's the one that's making it happen on the field. And granted, they put a lot into the defense this offseason, and the defense stunk last night. And so when that happens, you know what I mean? That's, you know, you're going to get what happened last night because this offense is going to struggle regardless. But as long as the defense is not able to fulfill their end of the bargain, they're going to have issues. And that's on Belichick too. To me, this boils down to, this is not a Tom Brady issue. This is a Bill Belichick issue. So tell me I'm making excuses. Call me a Brady apologist if you must. But to me, it's pretty simple. This is all about Belichick and his ego and him trying to constantly outsmart the room and never putting the proper weapons in place behind Brady because, oh, we won Super Bowls with Troy Brown and David Givens and Jermaine Wiggins. You know, we don't need to put any legitimate weapons around him. Oh, our starting tight end is in a full body cast and our other one is under the jail. We don't need to replace him with anybody. That's ridiculous. No other team would do that. You know, Denver didn't do that. Denver lost Eric Decker. They went right in and plugged in Emmanuel Sanders. Like, I don't understand why the Patriots did nothing and they lured even people like me into thinking that they were going to be a Super Bowl contender with this offense. And I still think they're going to go to the playoffs and I still think they're going to be heard from before the season's all said and done. As a matter of fact, they're still 2-2 and tied for first place in their own damn division. So if they beat an undefeated Cincinnati team next weekend, the whole narrative shifts and everybody's going to be back on the Patriots bandwagon. And it can all change with one game. But right now, through four games, it's not looking good, y'all. It's not looking good at all. But it don't blame number 12. Do not blame number 12 for this. Because who is he supposed to throw to? Is he? It's like Giselle said back in the day. Is he supposed to throw the ball and catch it too and block for himself? The guy's got no help. And if you're throwing the guys that are 5 foot nothing with a catch radius of nothing, it's a lot harder than throwing the guys that are 6 foot five and have a 40-inch vertical. You can miss a lot more easily and still complete your passes. And that's just the bottom line, man. They don't have anybody for him to throw to. So that's the end of my rant about Brady, Belichick, and the Patriots, man. I mean, everybody wants to throw my boy under the bus, and I remember it. I was so furious. I was favored in tweets last night, y'all, because I know that this season has got a lot of football left, and there is no way the Patriots are not going to be heard from by the time this is all said and done. It's just not going to happen. I mean, thinking anything else is just insane at this point. And I've said it before, I'm going to go ahead and say it again right here on the podcast. Bill Belichick knows that his bread is buttered with Tom Brady under center. And I think all these years of trading back and trying to be frugal with the cap and all that type of stuff, I personally think that a part of that is he knows Brady's time is short in New England. He doesn't have a ton of years left, and he wants to try to prepare this team to transition out of the Brady era into the Garoppolo era or whomever as smoothly and as seamlessly as possible, because then and only then will he be able to stake his claim as an elite head coach who was able to get it done without the services of Tom Brady. And that's why he's always nickel and diming this team. That's why he's always trying to patch up a receiving core and patch up an offensive line and not going all in like we saw the Broncos do this year. He's trying to set this thing up so that when Tom Brady leaves, it'll still sustain rather than going all in with one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time like he should be doing in the twilight of Brady's career. And that's a shame, y'all. It's a shame. And this is a fact. Bill Belichick, for all the praise that he gets for being one of the greatest coaches of all time, he's a sub-500 coach in his career in games where Tom Brady is not his starting quarterback. Don't believe me? Look it up. Now get him up, why? Getting them up, why? Getting them up, why? Yeah. What's with the melodrama? Fellas wanna hover in my cypher like a helicopter, like it's a special honor. The stealth bomber, gem dropper, make the ghetto holler. Intercontinental, taking you high like skydivers when we spark with live wires. Original, caveman quest for my fire. Express my desire to drop this new shit. These record executives keep telling me y'all stupid. Now if they right, shut the fuck up. Revolutionary, throw your guns up. Whether you a bougie broad who acted stuck up or some ignorant thug motherfucker shooting the club up, we gon' make y'all feel this. Break y'all spirit if y'all fake that realness. Word, we bringing it in from the new millennium to way after that. I call these cats rentals cause they plastic rap. Kill all the yapping, let's make it happen. You cats ain't real, y'all just a reenactment. Better yet, dramatization. Soon as the director say action, you start faking. I start breaking. The whole joint starts shaking. This ain't the time or place for you to prove something. Cut the stargazing, yo, move something.
Move something.
Word. Alright, bring it back to the top.
To be continued. Let's see what's next up on the menu. Run up in you. Lyrics that be fucking with you. In the mental. Pick any mental. Instra, funda, detra, extra, extra large, like the borough of Brooklyn, the residential, existential, list, specialist, like Sly Stone with my poems and fly stone. Ride along with cats who live great and die strong. Word, we gonna rock till nothing else matters. Y'all catch bodies, we catch excellent cadavers. You're next to kin and shatter, stories splattered in the tabloids. Erase your trace like you cotton mouth and we peppermint Altoid. Stepping the high, repping the spot, called Flatbush. Whether rappers or actors, you still feel the gap bust. The abstract then become the reality. Alcoholics like to call it the moment of clarity. Kill all the yapping, let's make it happen. You cats ain't real, that's just a reenactment. Better yet, dramatization. Soon as the director say action, you start faking. I start breaking. The whole joint starts shaking. This ain't the time or place for you to prove something. Cut the stargazing, yo, move something.
Move something, move something, move something, move something.
Yeah, preseason podcast of the year. That's what we are. That's what we go by. That's our moniker here. If you're new to the show, and if you are new to the show, welcome. We're very cordial here. Kick off your shoes and relax your feet. Know what I mean? Oh man, it felt good to get that Belichick Brady stuff off my chest, man. That was cathartic. Like I had to release that, you know. I've been harboring that for some time, and the Patriots have been good enough to kind of sustain and not make me lose my mind over it, you know. Last night was ridiculous, and so I had to say something. I had to say something. I had to stand up for my cause. This is my cause. This is why I'm here. And I didn't even mention the fact that the Patriots run have a rushing yard average of 3.7 yards per game. This goes to show you that the offense is doing nothing. The offensive line can't even run block, you know what I mean? Oh man. Or that they were like making up stats to try to discredit Brady. Like I heard something, what was the stat that I heard today? I wrote it down. They called it off-target percentage. They were like, Tom Brady's off-target percentage was 25 point such and such percent, the largest percentage in such and such and such. I'm like, what is the off-target percentage? I've been watching football my entire life. I've never even heard that statistic until yesterday. I don't know, man. Let's get off that. I made a trip up to Chicago this weekend, just a couple days ago. I was in Chi-City, and I had an interesting time. I actually went, hung out with a couple buddies of mine, one of which being Anthony Houston. He's a frequent contributor to the podcast. Shout out to my man Anthony, and check out his blog as well, Houston Life Chronicles. It's a WordPress blog that he has going on, but it's dope though. He does like sports takes and he does reviews of like TV shows and movies and stuff like that. It's real cool. Houston Life Chronicles, look that up. And he's on Twitter as well at AK Houston. Houston spelled Houston. I was up with him and my buddy Joe and Joe's lady. We all hung out in Chicago. We was in Chi-Town this past week, and Joe and Anthony, who I went to school with both of them, they're both Green Bay Packer fans. So we were Packer fans in Bear Country over the weekend. And, well, I shouldn't say we, because I'm not a Packers fan at all. So what was funny was, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan, but my squad was on bye week. So we go to the Packers bar on the north side of Chicago. So there's all these Packer fans, and they're losing their mind because Aaron Rodgers lit up the Bears like Vegas, you know what I'm saying? And meanwhile, I'm just sitting there on my phone, just totally indifferent the entire time, just trying to enjoy the game and eat my food without getting napkins tossed in it, because apparently it's a ritual at this bar that whenever the Packers score six, everybody starts polka dancing and stuff, and they play this fight song, and then they throw napkins at the end. Like all over the bar. And what's hilarious is they actually sweep up the napkins, and then Aaron Rodgers throws another laser for a touchdown, and then they throw the napkins all over again. It was hilarious. And you know, the fans there, they were cool. They were very jovial the other day, considering the outcome of that game. But that was a fairly interesting experience going to that game. But I did get to see Wrigley Field too. The bar was right near Wrigley Field, and I had never been to Wrigley before. So just getting to see Wrigley from the outside, you know, you could really smell the failure. You know what I'm saying? And there were I don't want to hate on the Cubs, man. What have my teams done lately, right? But I'm just saying, they had all these statues around the outside of Wrigley's. Like we walked around the entire outside of the building, and so they had like a Ron Santo statue and an Ernie Banks statue, and then like a Harry Carey statue, which was like kind of like off in the cut in the back where nobody was supposed to see it. And it was a weird looking statue. Like they had all these kids, I guess their kids are fans, like grabbing at the bottom of them. I didn't like the Harry Carey statue. I thought it looked ugly, but you know, what are you gonna do? The Ernie Banks statue is pretty cool though. But it was just like, you know, I just found it funny that the Cubs, this is a team that hasn't won in over 100 years. It's been 100 years since they've ever won a championship. And yet in 100 years, apparently they've had enough quote-unquote success to where they felt the need to immortalize like four people. Now, granted, one of them was a commentator, but still, it's just like, has your team been that good to where four guys deserve statues? And I think Anthony and I had a little discussion about this, because I don't see how, throwing up a statue for somebody is the new en vogue thing to do in sports. It's ridiculous. They unveiled a Jim Tomey statue in Cleveland. Now, I'm from Cleveland. I watched the Indians growing up. I'm an Indians fan. I watched Jim Tomey for years. They gave that guy a statue. That guy struck out all the time. You know how many World Series championships we won with Jim Tomey? Zero. I don't even think Jim Tomey ever won an MVP award. He may have won like one home run championship, and I don't think he ever won an RBI title. It's just like, granted, he's the all-time Indians leader in home runs, I believe, but, you know, is that really what the standard is? Is Jim Tomey for a statue? How come Kareem couldn't get a statue in L.A., but Jim Tomey gets one in Cleveland? What's that about? I think Kareem, he might have finally gotten one, but how long did that take? And how long did Kareem have to nag him, you know, before that actually took place? And, you know, the Lakers, they have a statue for Magic. I think they have one for Kareem, or one on the way, and they have one for Chick Hearn. But, I mean, like, the Lakers have had a lot of success. Like, the Cubs, like, y'all the Cubs. Y'all really need five statues for people? That's like the Cavaliers having five statues. It's almost silly that the Cavaliers have, like, five jerseys retired. It's like, really? Well, all right. They're important to the franchise. I get it. But statues is a big step. Like, I mean, if you've got a statue, you have to have at least one ring for the city for them to put a statue up. And the only exception that I might even consider making is Stockton and Malone in Utah, because they have a statue together, I believe. And, you know, they've racked up a lot of statistics, and they're all over the record books in the NBA. And they went to two finals, and even though they didn't win, you know, they did all that other stuff. So it's like, I could, you know, and nobody else is doing anything in Utah, let's be honest. So I understand why you might want to give them statues, because who's even going out to Energy Solutions Center and catching a Jazz game anyway, unless you live out there, right? So, fine. So, yeah, I could, that's an exception. But aside from that, like, don't just go handing out statues to any old body that happens to have a good season. Oh, you know, I average 31 points a game and 12 rebounds. Give me a statue. Oh, I hit 45 home runs and knocked in 120 RBIs one time. Where's my statue? I just don't get it. I thought it was wild. But on my way up to Chicago, though, of course, I was trying to get my mind right. I was trying to get into the Chicago kind of mood of things. So I figured I'd throw on some of that Common Sense, man. And Common's album, Nobody Smiling, came out in July. We kind of touched on it on the website, but we didn't get to do a tale of the tape of it. So I'm going to do a little bit of a tale of the tape. The first audio version of the tale of the tape review of an album. It's going to be on Common, Nobody Smiling. Now, Common, this was a little bit uncharted territory for him. For those of you that follow his career, you know, he's always been a very positive cat, very upbeat kind of cat. And that kind of, you were able to kind of see that permeate throughout his music. Nobody Smiling was a very dark album by his standards, and it was dark for a reason, and everything about it was. I mean, when you look at the cover art is literally dark. It's just a dark picture of him. the all of the instrumentation on this record, which was all produced by No ID from Chicago. You may remember him from working with Kanye West and a few other people. No ID produced everything on the album. Everything on is dark. Like, all the beats are very kind of, you know what I mean, really just kind of earthy sounds, real kind of, nothing really up-tempo, nothing really happy, nothing that you would play on a sunny day riding down the street in the car, you know, with the windows down and the 70 degrees out. Nothing like that. It's not that kind of record, not at all. So for Common to kind of go this approach, it was a little bit unique, and I feel like it was uncharted water for him, matter of fact, why don't I play a little clip of an interview? I'm going to let him describe to you exactly what went into the thought process behind creating this album. Because we know Common, yeah, he reps his town quite a bit, Chicago. And there's a lot of turmoil in the streets of Chicago, specifically on the south side. Even though I was just there this weekend, I was on the north side. I read an article that said that five people were murdered there this weekend. And 43 were wounded this weekend, just this weekend alone in Chicago, most of which took place on the South Side, and it's just really tragic stuff. People of all ages, I mean, teenagers, 20s, 30s, 60s, 50s. I mean, it's just wild out there. I mean, they call it Chirac for a reason. So, Common, and as we've profiled him on HipHopSportsReport.com earlier, he's been working with Kanye West to try to set up a new program to create jobs for young people and get these kids off the streets and get them doing something productive in the community. Get them, they're trying to invest back into their own communities and in the economy and joining the workforce and getting job skills and stuff like that. So, real good look for Common to do that along with Kanye West and Ron Fest, all Chicago natives. But Common's a musician at heart, so he decided to get back in the lab and link up with No ID once again and work on Nobody Smiling. So this is his kind of explanation of what that album, what this album is supposed to mean and how he kind of came up with it.
It came from when Rakim said, "I'm in the ghetto, nobody's smiling." When we continued the conversation, it was like we started talking about what was going on in Chicago. And honestly, like how some of the younger audience might feel disconnected to some of the music I put out, or, you know, just some of the music that people from my generation have put out. And I was like, man, that's funny because I've been around some young people and I feel like I'm just like them, you know what I mean? And I come from where they come from, and I ain't really, like, I'm not a person that's like, you know, looking down or like, man, I know more than you or da 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 da. It's just like, you know, I'm from where you from. So anyway, like, that was really the seed of it. And the Nobody Smiling title really was like, became more of a call to action, you know, and saying, hey, this is what's going on, y'all. Like, at one point we was thinking like, man, this album could be a What's Going On, like Marvin Gaye, or, you know, how Nas Illmatic takes you to Queens, New York, and you know what's going on there. I wanted this album to take you to Chicago. But Chicago is really just a microcosm of inner cities in the United States. Mm. And you know, Nobody Smiling is a call to action. It's more than just the album. It's the movement. And this movement is about, like, creating change for people. Like, creating jobs for people, creating programs for younger people, like creating like better situations, working to improve education, all the things that, you know, some of our, you know, I don't know, forefathers, but people that came before us, some of the people died for and fought for. We want to continue the legacy as far as standing up for that.
Yeah, so Common pretty much laid it out right there. He wanted this to be a call to action kind of a record. He really had a strong belief that he and No ID together could create something special and something that the people of that community could latch onto and then could maybe help them see the light at the end of the tunnel, because right now a lot of the people in that community feel hopeless. And they wanted to really affect change with this record. It's pretty bold stuff. It's a pretty you know, they're kind of creating big shoes to fill, so to speak, with talk like that. Let's start with this. Common, you know, if we're gonna go the tail of the tape format, we're gonna leave it in the tail of the tape kind of realm. So, you know, if you follow the website, you see that we always kind of place a category on these artists that we profile, because it's not fair to compare a Common record to a Chief Keef record. You know what I mean? It's just not the same thing. So Common, obviously, he's a veteran. He's a lyrical heavyweight. He always has been. He's always been recognized as one of the top lyricists in the rap game. And you know he has respect for the game because he's using this album to pay homage to Rakim, you know, who kind of coined the Nobody Smiling phrase, and Common kind of took it and ran with it. Lyrically, this album is on point. It's not the greatest album of all time from a lyrical standpoint, but it's definitely up there as far as some of the better albums that have come out this year from a pure lyrical dexterity standpoint. Common has never been one to fall off on the lyrical side, and even though he's been in the game for 20 years or something like that, he's still, you know, he can still bring it. He can still bring heat to the microphone when he wants to. It's kind of funny, like there was these little pockets, you know, everything was consistent on Nobody Smiling, but there was these little pockets where he would spit something like a little, you know, it was a little bit doper than what he said before. It was like every once in a while he would just hit these little peaks where he would say something kind of fresh. Check this one out, for instance.
Try to get me, get wet like bed sheets, poly with technique, and let the text speak like the Nair conference. I rap off the head conscious, freestyle free trap niggas from bondage. Every word you heard is bondage, 0087 on some bond shit. I'm out on bond.
So yeah, I mean, Common still got it. He can still spit with the best of them. What was funny is that I felt like Common really came off like a 40-year-old rapper on this album. And that's not a knock. That's not, I'm not taking a dig at him. I mean, because that's what he is. He's, I don't know how old he is, but he's probably in his late 30s or early 40s at this point. And he's been in the rap game for 20 years. And so I think part of something, I think part of the injustice that's going to maybe hinder this album down the road is just that we don't know what a 40-year-old rapper sounds like yet. We don't really know what it's supposed to sound like. And that's why I give so much credit to artists like Nas and Jay-Z, and as cliche as that may sound, but those two guys have really tried to push the culture forward with some of the records that they put out in recent years, and they have really tried to bridge that gap between hip-hop being a young man's game and then these guys growing with some OG knowledge and putting that out there to the masses. I think that this never been done before, because hip hop is such a youthful genre. Like it's youthful in that the people who are most successful and most prominent are fairly young people, and in addition, the genre itself isn't but, you know, 30 or 40 years old, something like that. So people don't really know how it's going to age. We've just never seen it before. But I think Common sounds like an older cat. He sounds like a cat who came up in the 90s and he's rapping now in 2014. So if you didn't grow up with an appreciation for that, it might be difficult for you to kind of embrace Nobody Smiling. I think that could be problematic for some of the listeners, which sucks because Common himself said that he's attempting to reach young people with this album. He's not necessarily trying to reach people that grew up on 90s hip-hop. You know, people like that, people like me, I might actually be too old to hear this message and really you know, learn from it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's not that he's not saying anything to me on this album that I wasn't already aware of. But the people that maybe need to hear this record, are they going to care? Are they going to want to listen? And I think that's one of the challenges that this album faces. The title track, Nobody Smiling, kind of spoke to the state of many people in Chicago. Common's actually rhyming about getting revenge on somebody that killed his boy, and he's at the funeral and stuff like that, and he's trying to you know, in his head rationalize how he's gonna go about seeking out revenge for his boy and how he's just basically gonna mortgage his future while doing it. Take a listen.
Second row of the church with my hood on. My homie used to rap, he was about to get put on. At his funeral, listening to this church song, his family yelling and screaming, I hurt for him. A cold world, that's why we pack heaters, listening to this preacher as he trying to reach us. I'ma need to go back, I got to get him. Back and forth in these streets, that's the rhythm. Revenge is supposed to be the Lord's, but I use my own accord. When I seen him on the porch, cost my man his life, I can't afford not to hit him. Shots ripping through his true religion denim. These streets is my religion. I stood over him, his life is over then. Now these keys got me locked up with older men. Thought these was the keys for me to roll a Benz. They ended up being the keys for my life to end.
So, I mean, as you can see, he understands the psyche, and I can appreciate that. What I felt like was a problem, though, was even if this is an attempt to establish credibility, Common, I felt like he did it several times on this album. I mean, if you go back and look at the track listing real quick as I pull up on the computer, he had The Neighborhood, No Fear, Nobody Smiling, Kingdom. All those songs, they kind of did the same thing. They kind of accomplished the same message as far as taking you to Chicago, which is what he wanted to do, getting you inside the mind of some of the people that are living through that strife in that community, and helping the listener see it through their eyes. But and that's great. But my thing is like, okay, then what? you know? And I feel like Common was a little redundant in his approach. And that's kind of what I, going back to what I said earlier about how, you know, he's kind of saying a lot by trying to compare it to a Marvin Gaye or a, you know, calling it a call to action type of an album. This is the problem that you kind of create for yourself, is because you talk big. It's almost like LeBron, not one, not two, not five, not six. LeBron went to four straight finals and won two of them, and they were still getting on him about that quote. You know what I mean? It's just, you can't set expectations like that, because sometimes they're hard to live up to. So even though Common, I feel like he did establish some credibility with understanding the mind of a young person in Chicago in the streets, which is impressive because he's not young, really, and he's not in the streets in Chicago anymore like that. But I felt like he did a good job of doing that. But even still, I didn't really feel like there was a whole lot of calling to action. Like I didn't finish this record and say to myself, wow, now I'm inspired to go do blank. You know what I mean? Now I feel like Common has put this message in my ear. He's planted the seed, and now I want to go accomplish X, Y, and Z. I didn't really get that impression from Nobody Smiling. So, but that doesn't necessarily mean it was a total failure. But I just feel like there could have been opportunities there where, rather than just saying the same thing over and over again, yeah, you know, you selling dope, you feel like there's no hope, you in the streets, you trying to eat. This is me rapping, not him. You know what I mean? But just saying stuff like that, you know, just you know, you in the streets, you trying to feed your babies, you got mom praying, your homie just got murdered, you're facing jail time, all this other kind of stuff. Like, yeah, I get all that. Okay, we've covered that. Now, what are we gonna do differently? We've covered why we're in this situation. Now, what are we gonna do to lift ourselves out of that situation? What are we gonna do to help people that are even younger than we are out of that situation? Maybe help them see the light at the end of the tunnel. Are we gonna begin valuing education? Are we gonna start treating women differently? Are we going to start thinking about our future and knowing that we are worth a damn? You know, we are worth a damn. I don't, you know, I'm saying, that's me saying that, not Common or anybody else. Black, young black men, yes, we are worth a damn, and our life is just as valuable as anybody else's, even though America and the media wouldn't want you to believe that. So I just felt like, given the fact that it was a call to action, I didn't really feel called to any one particular action. Now, there were, again, like, kind of like the lyricism kind of came at certain times, and it kind of like, oh, you got, they kind of surprise you with a couplet here or there or something like that. There were little pockets of knowledge that Common subtly placed inside this record. He talks about loving his daughter and how, what kind of stuff he's going to teach her, and he's talking about him and his cousin sat down and they were talking about getting some legitimate businesses together. But these are just like one or two lines here or there sprinkled throughout the entire album. And I felt like there was opportunities to have a more forceful impact. I mean, really, the only song that jumps out at me that where he really was direct was like the Seven Deadly Sins, where he literally goes through the Seven Deadly Sins, and it's a dope song. I like it, but he kind of goes through the Seven Deadly Sins and he lists them off and tells you how they're gonna bring us down. Well, I mean, that only works if Common goes through the microphone and says, okay, now you listening, you need to apply this to your life, and then maybe we'll see some improvements. You know, that's the kind of thing that I felt like this album was missing a little bit. Again, I did like the vast majority of the songs on the album. I actually did rock with. I like The Neighborhood. I like Real. That song kind of had like a little bit of a bounce to it. That was like the softest kind of feel to any song on the album, but I kind of liked it. Rewind That was a dope one, where he goes back and he talks about some of his relationships with No ID and you know, from back in the day, and you know, he talks about his relationship with Jay Dilla before Dilla passed away. I thought that was a hot record. I like the young Hearts Run Free. That was like it was a bonus track, but I liked that one a lot. I thought that one was fresh. And then maybe my favorite song on the album was Diamonds. But what actually stole the show for me was Big Sean. I like Big Sean. He was kind of on the hook, and then he kind of had a surprise verse at the end of the record. And I thought this verse was live, y'all.
Diamonds. Reminiscing when I had everything on layaway. I roll it with me and my partner like it was training day. Way before the ball, and that was back off in the training days. I used to hit the barber chair and say I need that fadeaway. Had a crush on what's her name, them feelings never fade away. Older brother gang bang banging like a 808. So you can't take this chain away. Real player, you can't take this game away. Slang away. Walk up in this thing like a real Rockefeller. But you can't take my dame away. Devil in a red dress, but she got that angel face. I could teach her how to get it day to day to day to day. The G code is my combination. Catch me off in the bank, thumbing through all kind of faces. Catch me off in court, beating all kind of cases. Weed money, pussy liquor, that's my favorite compilation. Diamond.
So yeah, I mean, you know, it didn't really have nothing to do with saving the community or anything like that, but I just thought that that was a nice little a nice little addition to the end of that song by Big Sean. So again, overall, Nobody Smiling, it was a solid album. Solid production. I mean, the production doesn't blow you away. There's nothing that No ID put on this album that automatically had me jump up like, oh. Like sometimes you know when you hear a record and you know you got one, like we got one. I didn't really get that feeling from anything on this album. Nothing really came close to that, as a matter of fact. But I wouldn't call the production whack, and I wouldn't say that any one song on this album is whack either. You know, I could see maybe somebody not really vibing with Black Magic that much, even though Jhené Aiko was on that record, but I didn't really feel like anything was whack on Nobody Smiling. It was a very solid overall kind of album. It took you to the streets, and I think that was a kind of a unique move for Common. And I think that he proved that he can still rhyme with the best of them when challenged. And so I would give this album, Nobody Smiling, a unanimous decision victory. I think that it was a pretty solid record, like I said, all the way around. And nothing really blew you away, but nothing was really weak either. It would be the equivalent of a boxer getting in the ring with just somebody who we know from jump is inferior in competition, and they kind of have their way with them for 12 rounds and they win by unanimous decision, and it was never really in doubt. That's kind of how this album came off to me. It was good, but nothing really jumped out and made it a special kind of a record. But again, Common, he had lofty expectations for this album, and I feel like in the end it was pretty good. So yeah, man, see, we're getting pretty late in the game here, man. I was going to touch on some football stuff, some more week 4 stuff, takeaways and whatnot. You know what I noticed? I noticed that the bad teams are really bad. The Raiders, they just fired their coach yesterday. You know, Dennis Allen on his way out. Now Tony Sperano, former Dolphins coach, is going to be the interim head coach in Oakland. Jacksonville is 0-4, and they look really bad. Some of my picks, man, I gotta be honest with y'all. Some of my picks from the preseason, they did not go well so far. But this has been a weird year for football, and I don't know if you follow, if any of you guys are fantasy football players or not, but if you look at your fantasy teams, will tell you just as how weird this has been. The fact that Tom Brady is you know, he's washed up in terms of fantasy value. You know, his fantasy value is in the graveyard, but that's wild enough as it is. LeSean McCoy's been whacked this year. Calvin Johnson did nothing yesterday. This has been a weird year for fantasy overall. Got a shout out to Dallas Cowboys, though. They went in on Sunday night and took it to Drew Brees and the Saints, who I had going to the Super Bowl out the NFC. The Saints, man, I told y'all about Rob Ryan, man. I told y'all the only caveat to their success this year was I felt that they had to get home field advantage, and I felt that the big question mark with this team is going to be Rob Ryan and his defense, because that first year he comes in, he riles everybody up with that rah-rah Ryan crap, and everybody buys in, and then it wears off, and then when the dust clears, people realize he's not that good of a coach, and then his defense has hit the toilet. You know what I'm saying? It's happened at like every stop he's been at. And so I just can't understand why nobody's really picked up on it to this point. But the guy's overrated, and he's overrated because his last name is Ryan. That's another lesson I think we can take. You know, as much as I rail against the Mannings for being overrated, respectively, Peyton and Eli are both overrated in my opinion. I think we can say the same thing about the Ryans and the fact that, you know, maybe they come from Buddy Ryan, and Buddy Ryan was a great coach. But just because these guys' last names is Ryan, they're also going to be considered great coaches as well. I think Rex is a pretty good head coach. I think Rob is a pretty weak defensive coordinator, but the name carries weight. So basically, this is me telling my brother that he needs to get off his ass and get famous so I can ride his damn coattails. You know what I'm saying? I hope you heard that, Kenneth. What else, man? I mean, the NFC South is just weak overall. There's a lot of good games on the slate, though, this weekend. And I'll run through some of those real quick. There are a lot of whack games on the docket this past week, week four. And there's a lot of bye week teams and stuff, which I hate the week four byes. But I think we're going to get rewarded with some better games this weekend. Arizona at Denver is a big one. That's a big one. Big road test for the Cardinals, 3-0, coming off a bye, going on the road. I don't know if Carson Palmer is going to be back for that game or not, but if Arizona could go out to Denver and win, that would shake up the league a little bit. I would love to see that happen. And then Denver would slip to 2-2 through 5 weeks. That would be fascinating to see. Kansas City coming off their big win. They're up to 2-2 now, and they look like they could be playoff bound once again, maybe, if they can keep this up. But they're going to San Francisco. We're seeing Alex Smith return to San Francisco for the first time. That should be a compelling game. And, of course, the Cincinnati-New England game. And even Seattle at Washington on Monday night, I feel like it's a pretty good one with the Seahawks flying all the way to the East Coast for a Monday night game, and see if Kirk Cousins is going to completely defecate on himself once again.
And there was much defecation
in the face of the bright lights of a national TV game. That should be interesting to see. And hey, there's a battle in Texas, Houston at Dallas. That's actually a pretty good game now, because Houston's 3-1, surprising people. Dallas also surprising people. DeMarco Murray leading the league in rushing right now. That's a total change of pace from the Cowboys, who would never consistently run the ball, and now they're doing that. And it's just a question of whether or not DeMarco Murray can hold up. I think he's a very good running back, and if he can stay healthy, it's going to give the Cowboys another dimension. Offensively, it's going to keep the defense honest, and Romo is going to have the freedom to kind of do what he does back there, because Romo's a good quarterback when he has time and when he's not forced to do everything. I think he can definitely make the necessary throws to get the job done if you're going to rely on a run game. The Cowboys' offensive line has been phenomenal through the early part of the season, and it's helped keep the defense off the field, so that much maligned defense that we heard so much about at the beginning of the year hasn't had to be on the field as much, so that's been good for them. We have Minnesota at Green Bay Thursday. Hopefully Teddy Bridgewater can take the field for the Vikings, and Aaron Rodgers has told everybody to relax, and Aaron Rodgers came through, and what do you know, he looked like Aaron Rodgers on Sunday, and there were napkins everywhere. Thank you for joining us this evening, y'all. Hip Hop Sports Support Podcast is signing off. Thank you for listening, and hit up the website, hiphopsportsupport.com. Latest information on hip hop, sports, all that type of stuff. And we're always trying out new things, man. But we appreciate you listening. Hit up the Twitter account as well, twitter.com/HHS Report. And on Facebook, please like us on Facebook. We need some more Facebook likes, people. So if you haven't liked us already, go ahead and give us a damn thumbs up on Facebook, please. Thank you. Facebook.com/HHS Report. And of course, the podcast is on iTunes as well, so feel free to subscribe if you want to hear more of all this. Thank you for joining the preseason podcast of the year. And we out of here, y'all. Talk to you soon, man. Later.
And it'll make you choke. You can't provoke, you can't cope. You should have broke, because I ain't no joke. Joke. I got a question, as serious as cancer. Who can keep the average dancer hyper as a heart attack? Nobody's smiling, cause you're expressing the rhyme that I'm styling. This is what we all sit down and write. You can't make it, so you take it home, break it and bite. Use pieces and bits of all my hip-hop hits. Get the style down, packed in, it's time to switch. Put my tape on pause and add some more to yours. Then you figured you're ready for the neighborhood chores. The E-M-C-E-E, don't even try to be. When you come up to speak, don't even lie to me. You like to exaggerate, dream and imagine it. Then change the rhyme around, that could aggravate me. So when you see me come up, freeze, or you'll be one of those seven MCs. They think that I'm a new jack, but only if they knew that. They who think wrong, or they who can't do that style that I'm doing, they might ruin patterns of paragraphs based on you. And you're all BDJ, if anything he play sound familiar, I'll wait till E say play him. So I'ma have the diss, who broke, you can get a smack for this. I ain't no joke. The microphone like a grudge. Be a hole of record so the needle don't budge. I hold a conversation cause what I invent. I nominated my DJ the president. When I'm CI, I'll keep a freestyle going steadily. So pucker up and whistle my melody. But whatever you do, don't miss one. There'll be another rough rhyme after this one. Before you know it, you're following it, fiending, waiting for the punchline to get the meaning. Like before, the middle of my story I'm telling. Nobody beats the art, so stop yelling. Save it, put it in your pocket for later. Cause I'm moving the crowd and be a rector fader. No interruptions till the mic is broke. When I'm gone, then you can joke. Cause everything is real on a serious tip. Keep playing and I get furious quick. And I take you for a walk through hell. Freeze your dome, then watch your eyeballs swell. Guide you out of triple stage darkness. When it get dark again, then I'ma spark this microphone. Cause the heat is on. You see smoke and a finish when the beat is gone. I'm no joke, no joke, no joke.